Rav Zevin points out that Chassam Sofer writes in a tshuva about a different topic, but in the byline, the dateline of a tshuva that he wrote during these 4 days, it talks about how these 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot are some of the most elevated days on the Jewish calendar. A day is like an unusual chiba and av between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Kol Yisrael, coming off the glow, the afterglow of Yom Kippur, of the Kippur Selkim of Yom Kippur, headed into Zman Simchaseinu of Sukkot. It's a very, very special time. Baruch Hashem, we have the chance to spend some of this time together in yeshiva, and in part to thereby appreciate a little bit, prepare a little more to appreciate the Yom Kippur Sukkot. So much. Sukkot is so unusually rich with mitzvahs and with chefze mitzvah. So it's such a colorful Yom Kippur. Literally and figuratively, you have Arbamidim and you have Sukkah. And that's just what we access in our spiritually impoverished state of Yom Kippur without a Beis HaMikdash. Sukkah is a Beis HaMikdash, you had Nisach HaMayim, Sukkah is a Beis HaMikdash, you had Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Such an unusually mitzvah-rich time of the year. We will talk for a few minutes. I would love to talk at some point about Simchas Beis HaShoeva, a lot more than meets the eye. Maybe at some point tomorrow, a chance to at least scratch the surface. The fascinating machlokas Rashi and Rambam. Probably machlokas Bavli and Rishalmi, about the nature of Simchas Beis HaShoeva. We sort of take it for granted. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow, maybe we'll talk about that right after Yom Tov. And I spend a couple minutes now talking a little bit about sketching a little bit of the mitzvah of Sukkah. The mitzvah of Sukkah, you look in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Yom Kippur runs through Siman Taf Resh Chaf Dalet, which describes the halachas of last night, Taf Resh Chaf Dalet, the end of Hilchos Yom Kippur, the Din Motzah Yom Kippur, and the special three bracha havdalah that we had last night with the Neir Shabbos. Then, starting with Taf Resh Chaf Hei, the Shulchan Aruch expands on the halachas of Sukkot. There are a good 40 simanim or so, more than 40 simanim. First halachas of Sukkah, and then halachas of Lulav and Esrog. Halachas of Sukkah follow a pattern that you see in many parts of halacha, and that is that the dinim break down into the rules of the chafza and the rules of the maisa. You have to figure out, you talk about hilchos shofar, what's a kasher shofar, and how do you blow the shofar? We talk about tefillos kelim, which kelim are chayiv in tefillah, and assuming you have to tovel, so what does the process look like? Hilchos Sukkah definitely fits that bill. It stands out in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch. In the dinim of the Chepta and the dinim of the Maisa. In the Gemara, the Mishnayos in the Gemara, you have Masechta Sukkah's five prakim. The first two prakim are dedicated to the halachas of Sukkah, and then beyond that, lulav of another dinim of Sukkah. If you've learned the first two prakim, so you know that the first parak and most of the second parak are about the dinim of Chepta, what's considered a kasher sukkah, tzach and walls and so on and so forth, portable sukkah, all the different rules of sukkah, building a sukkah, rebuilding a sukkah, and then the last couple of blocks from chafei to chaftes, so the end of the second parak, are about the part that usually strikes us as being more lamaisa, the dinei hamaisa, assuming that you have a kasher sukkah, so what do you do with it? And just to sort of sketch, you all know probably the basic, the very basic outline of both of those areas. I'm sure you know the Gemara Darshan's from Sukkim and the Chumash that the Schach is bound by several key tenaim. In order to be kasher for Schach, it has to be something that grows from the ground but is no longer connected to the ground. And number three is a davar she'ena makabel tuma. Where do all those rules come from? So that's because the Torah talks about sukkahs as being ba'aspecha migarnecha miyiknecha. The sukkahs, al-pshut shamikra, the Torah is talking about the time. The end of a sukkahs is this time of the year. It's when you're the ingathering of the harvest. Over the course of the, things grew, it was raining over the course of the winter in Eretz Yisrael, and things were growing late winter into spring. You harvested summertime, late spring, summertime. and you allow things to dry, and finally you gather things in, everything comes in, it's the raw grain stalks, you pound out the grain kernels, the disha, and you concretize what you have, you concretize the bounty that grew this season, and you bring it into the barn in advance of the coming rainy season. So this is Chag HaAsif. The Torah says, Sukkos is the time ba'aspecha migarnecha miyikvecha. And you gather in from the goren and from the yekev. The goren is where you were processing and threshing the grain. And the yekev is a wine press where you were turning the raw grapes into something that you're going to keep, into the wine or the grape juice. The Gemara has an additional level of interpretation in that pasuk. It's not just talking about the time of the yantar of Sukkot, it's talking about the actual construction of the Sukkot itself. What's the ingredient? What do you make a Sukkot out of? Or it says, Sukkot came for Shivas Yamim. You're living in booths for 7 days. What type of booth? So the Gemara understands that Ba'aspecha Migarnecha Mikvecha is also a description of the ingredient. What do you make a Sukkot out of? It has to be, when you imagine the scene, you're bringing in the wine, you're bringing in the kernels of grain. What's left behind is the rest of the plant. What's left behind are the stalks that the grain kernels had been attached to. What's left behind are the vines and the pressed out grape pulp after you've removed the wine, which is the part that you want. So as the Gemara says, the psolas gorin v'yeken, v'aspecha migarnecha miyikvecha, it's what remains after you bring in the grain kernels and the wine. The psolas, garim yekev, the garbage, the rest of the plant, that's what you use for a sukkah. So what characterizes the rest of the plant? What are the key characteristics of pressed out grapes and grapevines and grain stalks and grain chaff? So the Gemara understands that there are three, those are the three key criteria. On the one hand, it's all plant origin, it's all things that grew from the ground. On the other hand, it's obviously no longer attached to the ground. Obviously, all this was harvested before you separate out the ochel mitoch ha-psolas. And finally, the third element of third key characteristic of psolas, goren v'yekev, is that it's psolas. It's the part that you don't want. It's the garbage. That's what the Gemara says. It has to be a davar she'ena mekabel tuma. How does garbage become davar she'ena mekabel tuma? So another 30 to review the 60 second introduction to the halachas of tuma. We talked about this in the Bekiyah Shir last week. In the broadest of terms, here's a very quick overview from 30,000 feet of Seder Taros. There are things in the world can be tame for one of two reasons. Some things in the world are tame because the Torah says that it is tame because of who he or she is or what it is. It's tame because of its own status, its own identity. A metzora is tame. A mace is tame. A piece of nevela meat is tame. A dead mouse, a dead sheretz is tame. And so on and so forth. There are people and there are things who are or which are tame because of who or what they are, by identity. They are a source of tuma. We call that an av hatuma. The source of tum because of itself. And then, that's part of some of the people and things in the world that are tamei or tamei because they're avos hatumah, they're tamei because of who, what they are. Then there can be people or items which are tamei not because they are intrinsically sources of tumah, but because they picked up the tumah from someone or something else. They were mekabel the tumah from elsewhere. Tumah can be transmitted. Electricity can be conducted, and tumah can be conducted. Each one has its own rules and regulations. What are the things in the world that are, this is not at the moment the course for electricians, so we don't talk about who or what conducts electricity, but let's talk for a moment, who or what conducts tuma. So Chazal derived from Sukkim and Chumash, especially in Parashat Shemini, there are four categories of things in the world that can be mekabel tuma: Adam, Kalim, Ochlim, and Mashkim. Food and useful devices, Klei Masa, as the Torah says in Parashat Shemini, and then food and drink. Drink may be drabanan. The other three are definitely min ha-Torah. That a person can become tameh from contact with others, other tameh, that's psukim v'chumash. That kalim can become tameh, psukim v'chumash. That food can become tameh, psukim in the parashat Shemini and elsewhere. So Adam, Kalim, Ochlam, Mashu, those are the four categories of things in the world that can be Makabel Tuma from something else. Either from, we call something that was Makabel Tuma a Vlad HaTuma, a child of the Av. Either you become your Makabel Tuma from the Av HaTuma or from another Vlad HaTuma. That leads to Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, and so forth. And by the way, just in terms of our overall picture of Seder Taurus, that's two-thirds, loosely speaking. They're basically three basic questions, three basic topics in Seder Taurus. Is who or what constitutes an avatama? Who qualifies to be a mitzora, to be a nida, to be nevel, and so on and so forth. The second major area of tum v'tara is the rules of kabbalah tuma, and then the third one, which is not our focus right now, is what does the tahara process look like? Who or which items can become tahara and how? Is it mikveh? Is it harav shemesh? Is it karbanas? Is it hazayas meipar? And so on and so forth. The three basic areas of tumah v'tahara: avos hatumah, vlados tumah, and the tahara process. So in the world of vlados hatumah, adam kelim ochlam mashkim. What's common to all those three things is that those are all useful things. People are people, and kelim and ochlam mashkim are useful items. That's why the halachas of muktzah are midrabanan, are patterned after the halachas of kabbalah hatumah and haTorah. Loosely speaking, things which are muksa are things which are not makabel tuma. If it's not food or drink, it's not a useful kli, so then, loosely speaking, it's either raw material or outright garbage. And that's, loosely speaking, you learn the 17th parak of Shabbos, that's the beginning of the concept of muksa. And then you have, it comes up here in level, that's on level of Rabbana, it comes up here in level of Daraisa, that the psolas, gorin v'yakev, are plant, you know, things that grew from the ground, plant material, is no longer attached, and is neither food or drink, nor a kli. It's mere psalos, a davar she'eino makabel tuma. Those are the, definitely come across that in the past, the three basic rules of hechsher srach. You might wonder if the Torah says that a sukkah has to be psalos garim v'yakev, or something like psalos garim v'yakev, so why dafka the srach as opposed to the walls, if that's what the sukkah has to be made of? That's the sukkah has to be made of. So we all sort of know there are a lot more rules about the schach than the walls, but why? A sukkah without schach is not a sukkah. A sukkah without walls is not kosher either. I just suspend, if I have an awning made out of kosher schach, but no walls, an achsadra, as the Gemara calls it, an achsidra, so that's not a kosher sukkah. That would be convenient. If you jog or bike along the west side of Manhattan, so at one point in the 40s, 30s maybe, you'll come across a series of those types of roofs, like roofs that are basically suspended without, you can sit underneath and take in the shade, but there isn't much in the way of walls. So it's not chayv mezuzah, and it's not a kasher sukkah. Sukkah needs schach, and sukkah needs walls. So why, if these are the rules of what a sukkah is supposed to be made of, so shouldn't these be the rules of what both schach and walls are made of? Let's talk about pshat. So the answer actually lies in the first Rashi. Who here has ever learned Masechah Sukkah? Began Masechah Sukkah? Okay. Good for you. Ashreichem. So if you go back in Chazer, or if over the course of a couple of you open a Gemara Sukkah for the first time, we'll open a Gemara Sukkah later today, continue to open a Gemara Sukkah, you'll discover there's a Rashi at the very beginning of the Masechta who defines what a Sukkah is. Because the opening Mishnah tells us that the Sukkah has to be have more schach than more shade than sun. It's mostly mesukach. Rashi makes a comment, that's because a sukkah is a shade giver. That's what the word means. Basukah is teshu shivas yamim. Remember the sochechin b'chan fehen. The kruvim were giving shade with their wings on. They were shading the kaporis and the arun. That's what the shorish means. So chech is to give shade. A sukkah is a shade giver. So the essence of the sukkah is a srach. It also has to have walls, and that we darshan from sukkah. But that's not the essence of the sukkah. The essence of the sukkah is, the ikkar of the sukkah is the srach. And that's when the Torah defines a sukkah is made out of psolos garim yekev, something of these three categories, that means the srach is made out of those three categories. It also needs walls. But that's the core essence of the sukkah is the schach. There are a lot of dina about the walls as well. If you've learned the first parakut, a beautiful, fascinating, and complicated sugyas, Everyone knows that loosely speaking, you need at least 2.5 or 3 walls. And then there are a lot of dinim and a lot of halachas Moshe Sinai the Gemara has about how thick, how substantive the walls have to be. What do you do if you have space in the walls? The walls don't reach high enough. The walls don't reach all the way to the end. Those dinim usually don't come up that often this week because we live in a Baruch Hashem, a time of great affluence. And almost everyone has a very, very well-built, well-appointed sukkah. And we have four... Almost all of our sukkahs have 4 full walls with no shiles and no issues, and it's all kosher yosh. Sometimes shiles come up this week in terms of the dinim of the walls, the dinim of the tzach. Occasionally, a couple of years ago, someone was building a pagoda. A very handy fellow in my neighbor was building a pagoda. He's building a deck with a roof, a wooden roof on the posts. He's trying to figure out how much he needed to build around the sides to make it into kasher sukkah. So that was a shaila and defana sukkah before, during this week, before sukkahs. It sometimes comes up more over sukkahs itself. The shaila comes up most often when if there's a storm the first or second day of sukkahs, and there's a lot of wind, and the schach ends up, by the time you get back from shul, the schach is no longer arranged the way you had left it when you went to shul. Now you're trying to figure out, and it's yantiv, so you're very limited from a malacha standpoint in terms of what you can do, malacha and muktzah, in terms of what you can do with the schach. So now you're trying to figure out, well, the schach is still touching the wall over here, it's touching the wall over there, but everything shifts a little bit. Now you have to start clearing, do I still have enough walls attached to the schach in a way that's kosher? So the fanus shiles for us in our society tends to come up more over sukkahs itself than in advance. A word to the wise. Many, it's true in many parts of life. A wise man once told me that 90% of shiles can be avoided by advanced preparation. Think in advance, if you're a good Boy Scout, BP, and you're be prepared, you think in advance of what may come up and you prepare for it, you avoid a lot of complexity later on. So it's kedai to often to, for instance, to tie down your schach. To tie down your schach with something, ideally with a natural fiber, if you have jute or hemp or cotton, something like that, if you have natural fiber, which itself, natural string is itself kasher l'sukkah, because the post can discuss if I have, if my schach is held in place by something which is not kasher l'sukkah, that's called a mamid. If you're mamid with something that's pasul l'sukkah, so that may not be an issue. So you're best off if you're able to tie down your sukkah with natural string. It's now no mamon issue because the string itself is kashrus l'sach, and that way your sach is less likely to move. You're less likely to have issues or shilas or end up with a reduced area of that's kashrus l'sukkah over the course of Yom Tov in case there are issues. A lot to say in terms of the halachas of living in the sukkah. But for now, I'll just say the following. The Gemara derives the din of living the sukkah from the pasuk of sukkahs teishu shiva samim. That's the actual mitzvah. As the Netziv points out, making the sukkah is a hakshar mitzvah kasuv the Torah. Making the sukkah is not in and of itself a mitzvah. It's a hakshar mitzvah. You need to build the sukkah in order to live in the sukkah. Netziv says it's a somewhat more significant hechsher mitzvah because it's kasuv v'torah. Netziv develops the idea in the Sefer Neshiltos that when the Torah itself specifies the hechsher mitzvah, the Torah articulates, it has come a few times in the Chumash, Torah talks about tying tzitzit, Torah talks about making a sukkah, he thinks that might be like a quasi mitzvah. So a semi mitzvah, hechsher mitzvah, kasuv v'torah. That's why perhaps we apply mitzvah bo yosher mi v'shlucho. If you can yourself participate in building the sukkah or at least laying the schach, so that's more ideal than just relying on someone else to build the sukkah for you. Because even by hechsher mitzvah kasuv v'torah, perhaps we say mitzvah bo yosher v'shlucho. Some other examples, Yerushalmi talks about making a bracha. We don't pass it that way. Yerushalmi talks about making a bracha and hechsher mitzvah kasuv v'torah. But the mitzvah itself is not making the sukkah. The mitzvah itself is living in the sukkah. It's worth noting. We talk some other time about sleeping in the sukkah, but the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Gemara talk about different activities that you do in the sukkah. On the one hand, there's sort of this minimal, the minimalist perspective is there are certain types of eating that you have to have in the sukkah. Maybe if the weather permitting, certain types of sleeping that you have to have in the sukkah. But at the same time, the maximalist perspective, also according to Shulchan Aruch, is ochel v'yashen shona u'matayo. To eat in the sukkah and to sleep in the sukkah and to learn the sukkah and to be metayel in the sukkah. How do you take a tiyul in the sukkah? It has to be a pretty big sukkah. Climbing Breakneck Ridge, but the whole 3 mile hike is somehow subsumed in your sukkah. What does that mean? It's a brisa m'sachas sukkah. You're metayel of the sukkah. How do you take a tiyul in the sukkah? It doesn't mean you've probably all seen the video that was going on a couple years ago of a fellow who was. It was on a Segway with a sukkah built around him. It's interesting, Shiloh, whether it's kosher sukkah or not. Interesting to think of that. That's probably also not what Chazal had in mind, that you're taking a tiyul with a mobile sukkah. What they meant is the following. We use tiyul to mean to go for a hike. But that's an example of what Chazal meant by tiyul, which is to have a good time. One way of being metayel is to take a hike. Another way of being metayel is to sit and schmooze with friends, to play a game, to have a good time. The way you would have a good time in the house is the way you have a good time in the sukkah. And that's the defining metric for thinking about yeshiva basukkah is the Gemara says is teshvu, ke'ein tatar says basukkah is teshvu shivas yamim. So the Gemara comments, ke'ein taduru. Teshvu means the way you live in your house. So the way you live in your dining room and eat in kitchen, and the way you ideally live in your bedroom, and the way you live in your living room, and the way you live in the room in your house in which you learn, so those rooms are supposed to be transplanted to the sukkah. We don't transplant, the Gemara says, we don't transplant the kitchen. You're not supposed to be making the food in the sukkah. We don't transplant the bathroom that you leave in your house. But we transplant the dining room, or the eating kitchen, wherever you eat, and ideally we transplant the bedroom. And we transplant the living room also. The same way you would have a good time, whatever you'd be doing, having a good time, relaxing with friends or with family, whatever, at home. So ideally, if you would learn at home, so all those activities move into the sukkah. And that's it's this basic metric, unpacking the idea of teshu kein toduru, gives rise to most of the rules of when and how and who is pater from sukkah. Someone who's sick, someone who's taking care of someone who's sick, is I was talking on the phone there of Yontif a couple of days ago to a Talmud who's now living in a different time zone in the United States, expecting a baby soon. Baruch Hashem, so talking about what it looks like if they have to go to what fast Yom Kippur should look like. And what if they have to go to the hospital in Yom Kippur, have to go to the hospital on Shabbos, have to go to the hospital on Yom Kippur? So he made a comment, a lot of details to think about. So he made a comment, well, I guess I'll take along food at no mezos, no hamotzi, if I have to go to the hospital because I can't not be in the sukkah. I said, Adrab, that's mamash mishnah. Cholin misham shein. Your wife is in the hospital. So she's definitely a very chol shein basakana. And you're there to be mishamasher. So that's exactly what the mishnah says. If I'm the same way I wouldn't necessarily be eating in the dining room if I was taking care of someone who's sick. So I'm not mechayev to go in the sukkah if I'm inside the house or in the hospital taking care of someone who's sick. The rules of when you're a mitzta'er is pater from sukkah, if it's raining or if there's a swarm of bees or unusual 110 degree heat, whatever it is. So all those are based on teishu kein toduru. That's also a snack, a little snack that you would have. The Shulchan Aruch gives more defined details and parameters, but the basic concept is the same way you wouldn't necessarily have a snack at home, have a snack on the road, so you could have the snack outside of the sukkah as well. Yeah, question.
Why can't that snack be mizonos
then? That is a good question. So that's what I'm saying. The dinam of eating, the Gemara either min haTorah or midrabanan, the Gemara already sets down firmer guidelines. Haganda, yeah. Even a full meal. Sometimes they have a full meal in someone else's house. We would say.
I'm exclusive. We eat like.
I would have a full meal, like pizza, which is obviously no one has as a snack. Let's be honest. So I would have a full lunch of pizza in the pizza store, right? And yet, it doesn't mean therefore I can have it in the road. Yes, I'm not sure what that's dry to drop on. The fact that the Gemara gives more set guidelines for how much pasta, what type of pasta, and so on and so forth. I'm not sure if that's just a natural expression of dindaraisa, or that's a formalized dindarabanan, regardless of how eating patterns change. But if you're having dagan, so here are the rules. I'm not sure. I'll leave you with this for now. One lesser known din of yeshiva basukah, which is very important. In Hilchas Sukkah begins with Tafresh Chav Hei. In Tafresh Chav Vav, the Shulchan Aruch begins to talk about how to make a sukkah. You can't have a sukkah under a tree. Important to remember. If there's a tree that grows over your sukkah, every couple of years, you probably have to call an arborist to come and trim it back. All those demons start in the second siman, Tafresh Chav Vav. The first siman, in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchas Sukkah, Tafresh Chav Hei, 625, is Shulchan Aruch only says the following. Okay. That's the basic mitzvah of sukkah. And the pasuk goes on to say, Ki v'sukkos ha-shavti manye d'arasechem, ki v'sukkos ha-shavti is b'nei Yisrael. Shulchan Aruch comments, this is a halacha sefer. Shulchan Aruch should be commenting on the first half of the pasuk. Sukkah teishu shivas yamim. What's a sukkah and what's teishu? But that we only get to in the second siman. Right now, the Shulchan Aruch only comments, "Oh, those sukkos hey manane hakavod sheikifam behem v'al yakim sharev v'shemesh." The sukkos are shafti as bnei Yisrael. The sukkos that Kadosh Baruch Hu provided for us in Midbar were the anane hakavod, which is not really a halachic statement. It's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch would dedicate time to that, and that if I dedicate an entire siman to just that. It's not the Shulchan Aruch's fault, so to speak. The Tur, the Russian son in the 1300s, upon whom the Shulchan Aruch in the 1500s is based, he opens with this topic. Now, it's not unheard of for the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch to open an area of halacha with a small siman dedicated to the significance, the agada of a mitzvah. Hilchas Tzedakah, for instance, is like that. And there are a number of other examples. But it's more surprising, the Bach on the side of the Tur points out, that their Tur and Shulchan Aruch are taking a stand on the Machlokas HaTanan. For those who would learn the first paragraph of Sukkah may remember, it's Machlokas Rabbi Kiva Belezer. Kiba Sukkos Hoshavti, what type of Sukkos? Is that the miraculous Anani HaKavod? Or was it the natural wooden huts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu enabled us to build to protect ourselves in the desert? Machlokas HaTanan, about a non-halachic issue. And the Tur and Shulchan Aruch open Hilchas Sukkah by paskening, quote-unquote, a non-halachic issue. A striking way to open things, especially in a safer halacha. So the Bach makes the following suggestion. He points out that the Tur also, and Shulchan Aruch also spend a lot of time in Hilchas Tzitzis, and in the beginning of Hilchas Tefillin, talking about the significance and meaning of those two mitzvahs. Also, doesn't seem it's important. They spend what looks like a disproportionate amount of time and space discussing what appears to be a non-halachic issue. What's the time of the crop? What's the philosophy? What are the ideas behind the mitzvah? Then the Bach points out, well, what do those three have in common? Tzitzis, tefillin, and sukkah. What do they have in common? The chumash is a word that they have in common.
You're being yotzei every second that you're in it.
Okay, good. Those are continuous, like we had that Rambam last week, the continuous mitzvahs. That's good. There's a word, when the Torah describes those three mitzvahs, yedu, and the word before yedu, laman. Pesukah teishu shiv v'samim, laman yedu arseichem, so that in all generations you will know the following. You don't have Yedu by Tzitzis or by Tefillin, but you do have the equivalent together with a Laman. Laman Tisku. Laman Tiyat Torah Hashem Beficha. So the Bach says, what the Torah is saying there is the following. We began in the Bekiyas to talk last week about Kavana. And Mitzvah Tzrichas Kavana is a question of having in Kavana Latzeis. I have intent. We discussed it, and also with the Noiv Yehuda. I have that intent, so that I'm there. By doing this, I am doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me. Kavana Latzitz. But there's another kavana that's certainly ideal, but usually not obligatory, and that is kavana for the Tam HaMitzvah. We're doing a mitzvah. There are ideas behind the mitzvah. Obviously, it's ideal to think about the themes of the mitzvah when you do the mitzvah. It's going to impact you that much more. I could just come to shul and listen to the shofar and intend, I know it's a mitzvah to listen to the shofar, but obviously it's a much richer mitzvah if I'm thinking about the content, thematic content of shofar. But not, it's not ma'akev. Even if you hold mitzvah tzrichas kavana, which is a sugi in Rosh Hashanah, but that means I have to have in mind, and this is not just for musical satisfaction, I'm doing this because of the tzivu abor. Kavana, let's say. Kavana's Tama mitzvah is generally not ma'akev l'chol ha'deos, except, says the Bach, for these three mitzvahs. He says, the Torah said, put on the tefillin, wear the tefillin, so that Torah Hashem will be beficha, so that these ideas of tefillin, will be a part of your consciousness. The Torah says, wear tzitzis, so that you will think about and remember mitzvah ha'Torah. And back to our sukkah, sit in the sukkah. Why? In order that, in all generations, you will know the following idea. So the Bach says, in these three cases, time of the Kra is not just an added level, it's part of what the Torah describes as the mitzvah. The mitzvah is, do this in order that you think that. So the Bach thinks that the fact that the tour in these three areas spends a lot of time talking about bima, a machlokas about time of the Kra, it's because here, time of the Kra is part and parcel of the mitzvah itself. The Bach goes so far as to say that maybe you're not even yotze. Maybe it's mamish li'ikuva. Maybe you're not yotze, tzitzis, tefillin, or sukkah if you don't have the time of the Kra in mind. That's quite a bold position. Not sure that all the other posts can agree to the extent to which the Bach takes it. That's ma'akev. And again, the ma'akev versus the din l'chatchila is something we've been seeing play out a lot over the last couple of days in the Bikiyas. But certainly, I think many posts can assume, if not as far as the Bach, that's ma'akev, the very least that it is, even more, the time of the Kra is an even more significant part of tzitzis, tefillin, and sukkah than with other mitzvos. That's why there's a paragraph in the Siddur to say in advance of putting on tefillin that reviews some of the basic ideas of tefillin. Even if you hold like the Nevi Yehuda, leave out the first sentence, l'shem yichud, you pick up the Hini, Muchen, and Mezuman. It's based largely, I think, on the Kuzari. Gives you, and the Tur quotes it, gives you the idea, what are the ideas of tefillin? Ikari Emunah, the tefillin, remind me of the key story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Makas Bechoros, and the lessons that flow from that, and the practical Kabbalah Salmach Shamayim, putting my talents and drive at the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in Sukkah, it's Kedai, when you sit in Sukkah, to remind yourself and others to have a conversation about Kiva Sukkah Zoshaftis, B'nai Yisrael. That is part and parcel of the mitzvah of Sukkah. Okay, there's plenty more to talk about, but these are some highlights. A few highlights of the mitzvah of Sukkah, the chetz of Sukkah, the meis of Sukkah, and the kavana of Sukkah, all three.